okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay this man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Matt Weber. S&P futures down 12. Dow futures down 100. NASDAQ futures down 57. As Sears has declared bankruptcy. Unfriggin' believable. And Eddie Lambert, Kramer's buddy, all he did was say you have to buy Sears because Eddie Lambert doesn't know nothing about retailing, but boy, he's going to make this thing worth a fortune because of all the land and everything else. Guess what? He didn't know nothing about retailing. Now the place is going under. They're being sued by all the North Shore suburbs about all the money they took from the government and then not paying back because they're going out of business. Frank, can you think of a bigger fiasco?
No.
That's a one-word answer. I like that. I mean, what a joke.
No, I can't. Well, it was a long weekend. I went to South Bend.
So did I.
I was a docent yesterday for Open House Chicago, so I've been on my feet for quite a while.
I was did the tailgating, and I got down. Of course, my gang, you know, which is fine because of the world's greatest group. Nobody really knew what to expect because one of my buddies, the guy who was our contributor to the show, Bob Golden, who recently passed, Bob not being there was a big part of the weekend. It was like the, you know, it was like the fighter wing without the one plane kind of thing. Well, his wife usually makes a bunch of stuff, and nobody knew what they were supposed to be doing. So I'm driving down there, and of course I'm talking to Kevin, and I'm like, all right, I got to get us some beer, right? Well, maybe like some chips or something. All right, I can do that. Next phone call. Well, you know, really, nobody really has anything. How about like getting everything? I'm like, okay. So I pull into the Myers in Michigan City, and of course they don't have any real good sub sandwiches. They got a couple that turned out to be not so hot the day before. But the lady did open up the chicken thing just when I walked by it. So we ended up having a big, huge thing of chicken. It was real good, so it wasn't so bad. Chips and everything, and because I'm sure everybody ate before they got there, and we had copious amounts of beer, so everybody was happy. They all went to the game, and I left, and I made it to the seat exactly at kickoff in Rolling Prairie, Frank. My timing was perfect. And I think I decided that driving in, I drove in on 2 and drove back on 20. I think 20 is a little faster. Even though you have to go through New Carlisle, you get out of South Bend quicker.
Yeah, I agree. Right now, Western tends to be a little bad, except you do have that stretch right now that's only one lane each way. So I don't know if I'd want to.
Well, that was between Rolling Prairie and in Michigan City.
Well, I got to South Bend at about 9:30, so or 9 o'clock. I ran into no traffic anywhere. I got off at the main exit.
I was like 10:15, and I came up from the city. And the wait on Angela or Hill Street, whatever, at Notre Dame, it turns into Notre Dame Avenue, was so...
Right.
The wait was so long that the Nazis, we could let like three cars go through there and then about 100 the other way, so I had to be like a real knucklehead and creep one block over because I know the neighborhood and run down the side street and then go back in ahead of everybody. So I don't normally do stuff like that, but since I did know the train and they didn't, they had to pay for it. You know, those things.
I wish I had known you guys were tailgating. I could have called.
Yeah, we're over.
We would have stopped by.
You had a text. None of the calls were going through. Somehow they I don't know how that is, but all the texts went through, but none of the.
Do you have Verizon?
No, it's
AT&T was going through for me during the game.
Actually, mine's on T-Mobile. This new phone is on T-Mobile. I should have used the other one. The other one's on Sprint. My old flip phone, I think, probably would have been better, as you can imagine. But we had a nice time. Ran into some people and. Then I beat feet out of there and was back in Rolling Prairie just for the kickoff. So there.
That's great. I was lucky. I was on the east side of the stadium, so we were in sun the whole time. The people on the other side had stocking caps on and full-length down coats, and I took off my jacket. I was in a T-shirt.
Well, I ran into Dr. Billy, the gentleman who fixed the Eddie Weber's finger on Friday night. He goes, "Are you staying down? You sitting with those other creatures down there?" And I'm like, "No, actually, I'm not going to the game. I'm only going if I'm in a skybox." So he starts showing me pictures of these skyboxes. Frank, who do these people think they are? Caesar? They look like some place in. I mean, for God's sake, the room behind the skyboxes is the most opulent thing I've ever seen. It's like the private.
You should see the Irish pub they put in underneath the Jumbotron. I went to a wedding rehearsal there. Jeez, the finish on it is astounding.
Talk about the one percenters, huh? Anyway, hey,
oh,
guess what? Guess what happened on Friday? I have to make sure I tell Hal this as well. You know, this, the story that absolutely nobody believes about me riding in the car, taking my mother to breakfast like 25 years ago and listening to a guy from the Fed during the 60s and early 70s saying how they distinflation, they pulled energy out because it was Arabs were doing it to us, and then they took food out because you had to deliver food, then they took something else out, and finally they walked in and said, we can't lie anymore, fool ourselves anymore. I'll use a better term since I'm in good mood this morning. We can't fool ourselves anymore. We have inflation. Well, all of a sudden, Friday, I'm listening to this guy. I turn the TV up right away. A fellow by the name of Stephen Roach. I'm going to try and get him on the show. He used to work for Morgan Stanley. I think he's retired. Evidently, he was an assistant to one of the Fed guys during that time. And he said the story exactly He said the story exactly verbatim like me. But I'm sitting there going, God, I'm not as senile as I thought. I mean, the guy, he goes, yeah, they kept dodging this, just like we're doing now. He goes, all of a sudden, Arthur Burns walks in one day, and he goes, boys, I think we got some inflation. And that was the. He goes, at one point we thought, because what was the word? One of the very nice looking, I don't know how bright ladies on CNBC was. What's the difference? Words I never even knew. If one particular, like if you have a hurricane and all of a sudden the cotton prices screw up, there's a name they're using for that now. It's like something inflation that, you know, it just happens and you can't do anything with, versus like real inflation. This guy goes, yeah, we thought like 80% of the economy was whatever the other term was. I should have remembered it. Should have written it down, so I hadn't heard it before. And because it turns out it was just real inflation. And what did Milton Friedman, what is his comment? Inflation every time and every place is always a monetary event. Is it something like that? Mm-hmm. Close to the words. And so he says, yeah, we've had it for a while. We've just been in denial. But anyway, I got to try and get him on the show. I don't know where to find him, but I suppose I could Google him someplace. But it was interesting. And I'm like, God, this story just hasn't grown through the years as I've gotten older. But it actually was true. He goes, we denied everything. I mean, right now we're sort of, I think we're sort of doing the same thing. But I've said that a million times. What do you make of this thing, Manny? I know you've been doing other stuff. What do you make of this thing in Saudi Arabia? Is this going to turn out to be a deal or what? Manny, did you even hear this story?
I did not, no.
Well, it turns out this guy who...
Oh, it's a good one.
Yeah, the guy who... You've heard about the Saudi... Well, the guy in Saudi is pretty much a dictator. We talked about that a year ago, and he threw everybody made it the big hotel, the prison, was torturing people in there and taking all their dough. The new Saudi prince has decided to become another Pol Pot. Well, I don't want to say that bad, but... Anyway, but of course, because he's in power over there and he's got oil, everybody can't wait to stand next to him. So, this journalist that is against his regime...
Jamal Khashoggi.
Okay, thank you, Frank. Evidently goes to the Turkish embassy and sort of gets jumped. And then he ends up in the Saudi embassy. Nobody knows where he is, even though the Turks say they claim they saw him abducted. They claim the guy's tortured and killed over there. Somehow or another, the story is that his Apple Watch was still working, and essentially... You have an audio tape of him being tortured in his execution.
Yikes.
Yeah.
So they dismembered him, supposedly, because he hasn't left. And our president has said that he will not cancel the arms deal with Saudi Arabia because it would... it's too big.
Yeah, for one guy.
But he's going to be tough on him.
Yeah, he's going to be real tough on him. Meanwhile, there's some kind of...
You know, now that we've determined what our president is, I guess all that's left to do is haggle over the price.
Well, I'm gonna. The thing of it is, though, Frank, and I will not. Not exactly. I don't. How many presidents in a row we had? That. I mean, the Bushes were closer to those guys than Trump ever was or is. I mean, they were in the oil industry. In the
Well, there's that conspiracy, or not conspiracy. I guess it's a fact. There was a plane load of Saudi Arabians that flew out on like 9/12.
Yeah, 9/11 actually.
One of those things that I've kept up with because it. It could push me over the edge into conspiracy crazy.
Weren't 17 of the 20 hijackers were Saudis, right? The other three were Egyptian? Well, Manny, I don't know if you know, but every year or every 5 years or whatever, somebody in government out of the various places we have, they come out and they say who's the countries that are most, they don't let people have their own religion. And they're religiously oppressive. And Saudi's always like in the top five, and they always redact them and move them down. Plus, they still have that deal with the oil. What was the story when Hal comes down? He'll know for sure. Frank, when at the oil issue back in the 70s, the deal was they let Saudi off the hook on the oil, but they said they can buy U.S. treasuries, and it would never show up anywhere other than a footnote. Nobody ever know they were buying them or how many. And I think that deal still cuts today, doesn't it? That you never know how much the Saudis actually bought.
You're my Fed expert, Tom.
I think we have to run that one by. You know who knows all about that is Wayne. So what do you do with this guy? He looks like he's the new ruler over there. It's obviously we've got stuff going on in Iran where Saudi's supposed to be our buddy. We don't have the big Air Force base anymore, do we, over there? Didn't they boot us? I don't think we got that. I don't think we have that. We used to have that. But, I mean, obviously there's a huge connection. And, you know, in deference to Trump, which I don't necessarily like to do, that's like about as bad a piece of news as you could get in the Oval Office. What exactly are you supposed to do, Frank? I mean, all of a sudden this guy, we thought he was a bleep, and now he's a triple bleep. Because if he had this guy killed, and if it's all true, then what? Now what do you do? I mean, we don't buy their oil. I don't know how you do that. We're already not buying Iran's oil, supposedly, although it's getting out of the market. I'm sure some of it's getting it here. Now what do you do? They're not our ally in the region anymore? I mean,
are we not the largest oil producer in the world right now?
But we also are. We still import 45% of our stuff.
Is that for us to use, or is it just for us to refine?
What do you mean?
Into diesel for Europe.
I think we produce 12 million barrels a day, and we use 20.
I'm not really sure what's going on.
I
get different stories from different people.
Well, that's right. But
since I don't trade it, I'll be the first to admit haven't done the research.
We'll do a little bit of research because the whole concept that all of a sudden we're making all our own oil is crazy. I don't think we're even close. We were down to like 30% of what we use, and I think we're up to like 50 or something, or 55 or 60 maybe. I mean, it's way better. There's no question about that. But I don't think we're coming close to 20 million barrels a day. Now, out of that 20 million, how much do we take in and refine and ship to some other place? You got me on that one, Frank, but I think we should, it'll be our job this week, Manny. We'll try and break some of this down. But the concept that keeps getting floated, that we produce more than enough oil for us to not import a barrel. I think that's way far fetched. Hey, real quick, just Google U.S. oil consumption a day versus oil production. I think the oil production just went to 12 million barrels a day, and I think our consumption is like 20. See how far off I am, man. I probably am, but.
Well, you're right on target as far as the amount that we just under 20 in 2017.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm too far off on this. Now, as to what comes in and what goes out, you know, that I'm not all that privy to, but I think we produced 12. Did we just go through the 12 number? I don't know, one of you guys will find it. So what do you make of this Sears thing? I mean, can there be a big... Everybody talks about Amazon and brick and mortar. wasn't Sears the first place to figure out that you have to be able to sell to people that can't go to the, come to the store? I mean, isn't a catalog the same thing as the internet, pretty much?
Oh, it was even better because you could return what you bought to the store. It's a pain to return with Amazon.
Well, I mean, if you're out in the middle of nowhere where people actually lived by the catalog, they couldn't return it by the store. There was no store, right?
Yeah, but by the 70s, all these little towns didn't have a they'd have a catalog store. I mean, if there were 10,000 people, there'd be a place where, you know, one guy sat, you know, 5 days a week.
Frank, I was talking
and
like
you could do it there.
I'm talking like 1890 when they first started all this stuff. Where you
got
the Roebuck catalog in the mail, and that's how you did your shopping. At one point, those guys, did you ever see, Matt, you probably never did. Did you ever see the full array of catalogs?
No, I probably not. I assume they discontinued those a long time ago. I do remember a Sears catalog though.
Well, I mean, but it was the full array was probably 6 to 8 feet long.
Wow.
I mean, they had, remember when we were 17, we bought this old Chris Craft boat. And sure enough, I went to Sears and I grabbed a boater's catalog. And there was all the lines, all the bumpers, all the stuff. I mean, if you were, you could order all your boat stuff through there. There was a camping catalog. There was a Big and Tall Men's catalog. There was a housewares catalog. I mean, there was a kitchen, whatever, kitchen stove and whatever, a refrigerator catalog. I mean, every conceivable thing had these little catalogs. Because the big, huge catalog, you could never have gone through the mail, right, Frank? I mean, they made the catalog like big enough. And once it got to a certain size, there was all these sub-catalogs. Like all the Big and Tall stuff was all in a separate catalog and everything. But how did they, I mean, they totally lost their way. I mean, just, and this guy, you could probably trace it actually geographically from the for those that don't know, the Sears store, the Sears headquarters used to be, was it at Fortin and Cicero, Frank? Something like that? North Avenue and Cicero?
I was Holman, wasn't it? They had their own post office there.
Yeah, but they had their own, but it was in the city, it was on the west side, right? And the people
it's that big tower you can see from the Eisenhower's the area where the, remember when the protesters said that the police were torturing protesters for G5 that place.
Well, the people, the buyers and everything, essentially worked in the blue collar neighborhood, and that was their. The buyers were the same as the customers, right, Frank? So they knew what people essentially wanted. Then they said, okay, we're going to move downtown, which is okay. They built a Sears Tower, and people from there, I mean, Chicago has an awful lot of pretty good public transportation. So most of all, the same people came downtown, right, Frank? So it really wasn't that big of a change. But then when they decided to move to Hoffman Estates, whosever idea that was, essentially, most of the people down here said, I can't get to Hoffman Estates. You got to drive, you got to do whatever. They pretty much changed their workforce, maybe on purpose, to a whole different group of people. And the people who worked there weren't the buyers or weren't the customers anymore. I mean, is that a fair assessment? And the whole tone changed.
Yeah.
They just didn't seem to know how to buy for people. They spent more time moving to Hoffman Estates. Well, matter of fact, one of my buddies, they worked that whole deal tax-wise, moved those guys out to Hoffman Estates. Talk about complicated, how much money that they grabbed from those towns, Frank. It was unbelievable, the tax advantages they got from moving out there. They were the, who are these idiots in Wisconsin now that make the screens? Many, who are those guys? They were supposedly building a $5 billion plant in Pleasant Prairie right nearby.
Foxconn.
They were like the original Foxconn. Went somewhere and got, you know, Hoffman Estates and everybody around there to build roads. They built them an exit, right? They built them a theater. And then they gave them every tax advantage known to man. And after, 20 years, they extended it, even though the company was, you know, going straight down. And now, didn't there somebody file a huge lawsuit Friday? All the tax advantages they got, and the schools never got the money. Now the schools want the money back because the people aren't going to be there anymore. Well, how's that going to get settled?
The one scam, and I don't know if it's a scam, but I kept on seeing that the CEO was one of their biggest lenders.
Well, yeah, he kept Eddie Lambert.
I wonder what his collateral is, A, and B, what his standing is among all creditors.
Well, I know that he was throwing money in there.
I see some sort of scam coming up here.
I'm going to say that I think he actually put a lot of his own money in as a way to save the place. Now, what as for his collateral, I don't know, but you can't say the guy near the end didn't throw some money in, because he did.
But was he doing it to save the place, or was he doing it to get some sort of property somewhere, specific property? I don't know.
I think what Frank is asking, Maddie, and we've gone through this so many times with we first started the show, there were a couple of bankruptcies. Are you saying that is he going to be the next Donald Trump, to where out of bankruptcy? he's going to come out of everybody who owns Sears stock is going to get basically stuck where the sun don't shine, and there's going to be a new. They're going to get rid of half the debt, and then the creditors are going to come up, but they're going to get the stock. And is he going to come out to be, 50% owner of the new company? That I don't know, Frank. That I wouldn't be a bit surprised. I wouldn't be a bit surprised. And another.
Or is he going to end up with Craftsman?
I think they already sold that. They already sold that. I'm starting a story here, and I'm not a bankruptcy attorney, but if you look at what happened on United Airlines, look at what happened on General Motors. When these companies start to go downhill, sometimes what you want to do. Now, he actually, like Frank says, he contributed money to the place, so who knows what his deal is. But if we wanted to be slick right now, there's a Southside term, if we wanted to be slick, you wouldn't go out and buy the stock up at 30 cents on 30 cents it was trading Friday, or 34? You wouldn't, because that gets you nothing. That gets you a bigger hole where the sun don't shine. But if we went out and bought up a whole bunch of bonds at 10 or 20 cents on the buck or whatever they're trading, they're probably not that low. Actually, we should probably, I'll find out today where they're trading. If we bought those up, if we're a big enough swinging bleep, we get a seat at the table. So what the bankruptcy judge does is they take all the creditors and they put them in a room, basically to split up what's left for yourself. And you want to be in that room. Is that a fair statement, Frank? If you're big enough to get in that room, all of a sudden you may come out with 20% or 15% of the stock in the new firm. That's what the General Motors didn't the unions come out with. They took a hit on pensions and other stuff, Frank, and on the contract, but they came out with what, 40% of the stock of the new GM, something like that, 45. Mm-hmm. So if you're in that room, you can come out smelling like a rose, just like Trump's first bankruptcy. I don't remember the details, but then everybody else got stiffed, and he ended up owning a higher percentage of the new place than the old place, didn't he, or something like that? Because he somehow had made himself a creditor. In addition to being a shareholder, that's what you're talking about, right, Frank? Now, Eddie Lammer is now not just the CEO, well, no longer the CEO, he's out, but he's now a big time creditor, correct?
And he's still the chairman.
He's still the chairman.
Yes,
yeah.
His hedge fund. And that's the other question I'm scrolling right now. And is it personally or is it through his hedge fund? He has a. It's questionable.
Well, Dr. J's...
His hedge fund has $2.4 million in Sears debt.
Million? Or more than that?
$2.4 billion.
Yeah. It was a lot. Well, Dr. J's lovely Judge Bride has a real good friend who's a bankruptcy attorney, and he knows all these stories. I wonder if I can talk him into coming on someday, because it'll be fascinating. Because he knows all about who got to sit at the table at the United deal and who didn't and who came out with stock and who didn't. And the shareholders end up clunked. Preferred shareholders come out clunked. But somehow or another, the judges are very good at giving a big bond holder. I mean, you could have bought the stuff last week for $50 million with a nominal price of, whatever, $500 million. And you say, geez, I own $500 million worth of stuff. Okay, you get to be in the room. But It's a weird deal, and the guys who can get you in the room are worth their weight in gold, right, Frank? Because you end up with significant portions of a whole company that other people used to own. It's weird. I mean, again, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying.
And you end up with very good tax benefits.
Oh yeah,
sometimes.
Oh, yeah. It's not a bad do, any which way. Well, I mean, it's probably not better than just. Is that is it's. they don't seem to care, Frank, if you just bought the stuff. I guess that's my point. If you were a guy
yes.
who actually had $1 billion worth of Sears bonds, you know, if it was the, I mean, if you were the, you know, the state pension fund or something in Illinois, I get it. You deserve a spot at the table. But if all of a sudden it becomes junk rated, and you and I buy that up for pennies on the dollar, I don't know that we deserve a spot at the table. I'm thinking maybe the state still does. But I don't know, but now they're out, right? But this is a very tangled web, so we're kind of walking down this road here. But we come back from break, we'll talk a little bit more about how to trade the market this week, Frank, because you're a market dude. S&P futures down 950, come back just a little bit. Dow only down 57, so they've come down quite a bit.
By the way, Chief, DP writes in on Twitter, cost push inflation is the term you were looking for earlier.
Actually, no. But we'll talk about that when we get back. NASDAQ futures up 45, oil up 53 cents, 10-year yield 3.16. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Frank Fee, Mr. Mayor Weber on the board. S&P futures now down 750. Dow down 55, was down over 100 when we came in. NASDAQ futures down 37. Oil up 53 cents, 71.87 for West Texas. 10-year yield 3.16, so that's pretty much where it was on Friday. Over in Europe, we've got slow. DAX up 28.2%. FTSE down 7.1%. CAC around down 9.1%, so not much going on there. In Asia, we've got heading south yet again. Nikkei down 423, 1.9%. I wonder how much of this is tariff stuff and how much they decide their market's been lousy. The government's been buying it for years. 22,271. That's got to be a low for a while. We'll check that out. Shanghai down 38, 1.5%. 2568, almost below 2550. I got to believe that that's got to be pushing up a 16-year low or something. Hang Seng down 356, 1.4%, 25,445. Again, West Texas is up 53 cents. Brent up 82 cents. The spread is now $9 and, let's say, 40 cents. Natural gas up another cent. Well, it didn't, made it up to 324 last week, came back down. It's right back up there. 323.3. RBOB 195. We've got gold up $12, 1234. Silver up 12 cents. Matt Weber, you were all over the place. And Frank, you were in Indiana. Where did you end up getting your gas for? I got 273.
I haven't bought gas.
I got it at 261 at Sam's Club in South Bend.
Really?
In Mishawaka.
It's almost worth the drive for the Suburban. I had a big drink, 30-some gallons. I was getting a little... Anyway. Cost push inflation. Actually, what I was looking for is that there's this like a new term, Frank, you know, in the financial press now, if you come up with a new term. Anyway, Matty, do try to other sports, then we'll talk about inflation.
We can do that. 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have an issue already on the Stevenson outbound side just before Kedzie. We had an earlier crash, and now an investigation and cleanup is ensuing. The two right lanes are blocked at Kedzie on the outbound side. This is causing delays in both directions. Lakeshore Drive out to the Tri-State, 47 minutes. To I-355, already 57 minutes as a semi rear-ended a car and caused this issue. So expect congested traffic on the outbound side of the Stevenson, and then there's, of course, gapers on the inbound side near Kedzie as well. Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford are looking okay. Traffic building on the Eisenhower, but no issues to report. Same with the Kennedy and Edens. Off the expressways, western suburbs, Route 83, which is Elmhurst Road out there, and 147th, which is right near Cicero, there's an accident causing delays. And out in suburban Wayne, Dunham Road at Stearns Road, there is an accident as well. One other issue on the south side, 71st between Indiana Avenue and King Drive is closed due to police activity. It's a barricade situation. Apparently, the number 71 South Shore buses are temporarily rerouted as this investigation continues. Weather today, lots of sunshine later on, a high of 48. Right now it's overcast with some rain in the area and 38 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, rainy today with a high of 75. Right now it's mostly clear and 62. In sports, the Bears were behind 7-0, went in for what appeared to be a game-tying touchdown, fumbled at the 1. Then they stormed back, scored 21 points to go up 21-10. Then the defense completely fell apart. Then Mitch Trubisky threw an interception in the end zone. Then Tariq Cohen had a big fumble. Then they missed a game-winning field goal in overtime. All of this led to a 31-28 collapse in Miami. Bears are now 3-2, losing 31-28 in overtime. Cardinals lost at Minnesota 27-17. Sunday Night Football, a classic last night between New England and Kansas City. Chiefs suffer their first loss at the hands of the Patriots on the road. 43-40 was the final on that one. Steven Gostkowski with a game-winning field goal. And finally, ALCS. It was a good sports night in Boston. The Red Sox are on the board. That series is now tied 1-1 as they beat the Astros at Fenway 7-5. Chief.
How insufferable do you think those people were at the Tripoli last night? Yeah, glad I wasn't there.
Oh, man.
Boston guys are a little over the top, Frank, I think. Just a tad, but just me. Just saying, you know.
And David Price finally won a postseason game.
Yeah.
Even though he didn't pitch particularly well.
No, there was all the people, and I was listening to ESPN. They had A-Rod's not on the radio. It's just a guy and my girl, Jessica.
Is that true? Yeah, I don't know.
And they just have the two of them, I think. And anyway, they were said a lot of people. Chris Sale didn't win the first game, but they were toast. Typical Boston. They were such fans, and they're, of course, they're crummy instantly. I get this thing here. Types of inflation, the four most critical, plus nine more. Anyway, cost plus is in here. Cost plus is if you have something like if at the end of a inflation cycle, you actually have maybe union contracts that are causing wages to continue to go up, even though maybe there isn't that much inflation anymore. You have to raise prices because your stuff does go up. It's called cost plus. But there's a new term. The one I'm talking about, Frank, is a new term for the type of inflation that actually isn't caused really by the Fed. And it only really happens in specific, type products. And usually the economy can deal with it pretty easily and without becoming generalized. I mean, perfect example, like Matty Weber's from Iowa. All of a sudden, 1 year let's say in August, there's some massive hailstorm that takes out, a third of the soybean crop in the state. I mean, you might get soybeans going from $10 a bushel to 18, but it works its way through, by the time some stuff gets up here from Brazil and the next year's crop, it doesn't cause any change in policy at the Fed. It doesn't cause anything. Right, Frank? It just happens. It's a little bit, I guess, of cost push, but not really. Well, there's a new term for it that I'm stumbling around to find. I'll have it by tomorrow because whenever there's a new term on CNBC, they'll use it about 100 times by 9 o'clock. So, but anyway, what you look at is you try and find specific causes of inflation. And in the 70s, it was the Arab oil embargo. It was always, oh no, it was those Arabs. Everything comes down to oil. The reason why plastic is up is because of oil. The reason why swimming pools are up is because of oil. You name it. So finally, one day you say, it can't all be oil, right, Frank? I mean, but I think like a soybean example or a corn example that lasts one growing period, it could actually be a specific event, right? There could be a flood. There could be something. Clearly, I haven't looked at cotton, Frank. I don't know if you got it on your screen. I mean, cotton, I think, took a big hit. Not a hit. The cotton crop took a hit. I'm thinking it was probably a spike in cotton crop off of this hurricane, but I'm not sure. That was the warning. Anyway, you think the Fed?
Well, I think that in Iowa right now they're hoping for a spike in soybeans or corn.
Well, they don't. Yeah, but they don't want their
cut their throat.
Well, there the problem is you don't mind if the hailstorm is on the guy next door's farm, while you still have your crop, because then when the prices go up, it's good for you, But that's. It doesn't always work that way. That nasty hailstorm may actually come over and wreck your crop too, right? In which case, you don't really want the price to go up, especially if you sold futures against them. That would not be good.
Exactly.
What I just said, for those that don't know what the hell I'm talking about, if a farmer plants, let's say, I mean, bushels of, how many acres of corn, and right now I think they're all getting about, it used to be the best guys, Frank, at 200 bushels an acre. Now, I think the best guys are up to what, like 212, 220? And even the, I won't say the schlump guys, but like the guys that maybe not the best land and everything else, they're all pushing 200. So if you sit there and say, okay, soybean or corn is $4 a bushel, that's fine, I can make money there. I'm going to sell the futures at $4. If you sell all your futures at $4 and all of a sudden there's a localized weather event, maybe not so local, maybe 10 counties around you, and all of a sudden everybody's crop gets washed out or whatever, and now you don't have any corn, But oh, by the way, the price, like Frank said, has just gone up. Now it's $6. You've got to cover your future at $6, which means not only do you not have a crop to sell, but you're down $2 a bushel on your hedge. That's why for those guys, it makes sometimes it's a lot better to buy puts. It's a lot better to, you know, do something else than, or maybe hedge half your crop or whatever. But if you do the whole thing, now you're taking a chance that you're not going to get a weather event in your farm, right, Frank?
Exactly. Yeah, you're 100% right about corn yield. Right now they're calling 169.3 and for average corn yield, and it hit 100 in 1990. It was right around 102, so that's what the yield is.
But when you talk about average,
that's for the United States,
right? You talk about average. You're talking about places in Wisconsin that are hilly, and but the breadbasket really is. What was the geological phenomenon? Matt, you should know this. You're from Iowa, for God's sake. What's the geological phenomenon where there's a spot? It starts in Indiana, and it's like a big kind of wacky-looking bent cone through central and northern Illinois into Iowa, where if you're in that area, your soil...
The prairie?
Yeah, your soil is so much better than anybody else's that, if you're 50 miles below it, you can still raise corn, but you're not doing 200, you're doing, 110.
That was the tall grass prairie, I believe.
But there's a certain thing that happened to the soil, and it was the glacier. I think it was the bottom part of the glacier where it basically scraped everybody else's good soil and dumped it on you. I think is what, if you got us, I mean, there's, there, cause, I mean, southern Wisconsin does not have the same soil as central Illinois. It's not even close. I mean, I'm not an expert on this, but. Since my brother, Dan, president of PTI Securities, he was trading in the corn pit for a long time. He made this his hobby to learn about all this stuff. We should have Dan on to explain all this stuff instead of you and I stumbling around on it. All right,
we're coming up with quite the list of people.
Yeah, hey, oil, what about the...
Bankruptcy?
Is it me? Or I watched the Bear game yesterday, and again, I'm not the world's most massive fan, but how rigged are these games? Why couldn't the guy... Matty, did you watch it at all?
I watched the whole Bear game.
How much holding was going on with Khalil Mack?
There was holding at least three times that I saw on Khalil Mack specifically, and none of them were called.
The one time he was by the guy, and the guy turned around and wrapped his arms around him, it was unbelievable. And everybody kept saying, gee, we haven't heard from Khalil Mack. Well, the guy was grabbing his pants and pulling him down. For God's sake.
The Bears' pass rush was completely non-existent yesterday, and I think holding had a lot to do with it. They looked like they were tired and out of shape in the second half.
Well, it was 88 degrees.
Yeah, I know, but it was 88 for both teams.
True.
And that was supposedly going to be their big advantage going into that game is the Dolphins were missing some guys up front. They had a backup quarterback. The Bears, you were coming off a bye. They're healthy. They have an elite pass rush. And they were going to be all over the quarterback all day. And they never got to the quarterback once. Not one time. And Osweiler is a veteran backup. And you give any NFL quarterback time, he's going to be able to make some plays. And that was the difference in the game. The offense put up 28 points, and even in spite of, three turnovers and a missed field goal, you put up 28, you should still win. And the defense was horrific yesterday.
Well, I think there was some holding, but some of these guys are one-down players. You put Hicks two downs, and he heads for the sideline. He can't do three in that heat.
Well, yeah.
The heat index was over 100. Big boys do not do well in that.
No, I know, and when your interior or your front four, or really, you play seven of those guys, you're obviously going to rotate those guys in and out, except for probably your middle linebacker. Roquan Smith played pretty much every snap, and that guy's really good, by the way.
Yeah, he is good.
He led the team in tackles, and he's a rookie. That was his fifth game, and he looks like he's the best player on the defense. So you're going to rotate guys, but man, they never touched Osweiler. I don't think they ever laid a finger on him.
No, I don't think they, plus I see this happen a lot, and again, in deference to the Matt Webbers of the world, these guys have every stat sheet in front of them. But when these guys start playing for the winning field goal over 50 yards, the percentages can't be that high.
I mean, it was ridiculous to do that. It made no sense.
I agree.
You're moving the ball at will in the second half. I mean, up and down the field, no problem at all. If they didn't cough it up, like I said, they would have put up 42 points. And you break off a couple of big runs and get into close to field goal range, and then you decide we're just going to hand it off three times in a row here and kick a field goal. What the hell are you doing?
But it was third and four. They actually got 6 yards in the first two.
Right. So you don't run it a third time in a row.
At the very least, if you're going to do that, at the very least, and Nagy, where are you? I hope you're listening. At the very least, kick on third down. So if you muff the snap like the guy pretty much did, he could have just picked that up, hammered it into the ground, and had another try.
Well, yeah, then it would have been the 58-yarder.
No, he could have picked it up and thrown it down and made a pass out of it, just like a quarterback.
Yeah, I'm sure he would have done that and executed that without an issue.
Well, but I mean, you could, right?
No, you could.
But I'm saying that you give
if there's no receiver in the area, though, then it's intentional grounding.
It's not.
Yeah, it is.
Well, you could
not if you get outside of the pocket.
Yeah.
Now
our holder has to scoop the muff snap. He's got to roll out and he's got to pass the line of scrimmage and outside the tackle box.
He's getting the snap, correct?
Correct. The holder.
Why can't he just stand up and spike it like a quarterback can?
Oh, spike it into the ground?
Yeah.
He could do that.
Okay, that's what I'm saying.
I mean,
he could have stood up on that snap, spiked it down and said, let's do it again.
If it was on third down, he could have done that.
Yeah.
He could have done that. That's true.
He did it on that down to give the other guys the ball. That wouldn't have been a good idea.
And, you know, if at the end of a game, there's nothing wrong with doing that, you know, kicking the field goal on third down in case you do have a bad snap. However, you could also throw the ball and get a first down and then keep running the ball and keep throwing the ball and try to score, you know, try to make it a 30-yard field goal where the percentage doubles that you have a chance of making it.
You know, the kicker coming out there has got to be going, I know I can make this, I'm supposed to make this, but Jesus, why couldn't a guy give me another 10 yards?
I mean,
but you know it's got to be going through his head.
Yeah, 53-yarder on the road to win a game, I mean, it's like a 50-50 shot.
Well, that's what I think. I mean, what is the number? It's got to be, over 50 yards has got to be 50-50.
I think it is. And this year, the way kicking, I mean, guys are missing extra points left and right, let alone 50-plus yarders. In an outside stadium. I mean, it was for as aggressive as Nagy is with his play calling, I was just shocked at that decision to just run it, you know, like seven times in a row on that drive. And they were breaking off a couple of big runs early, so I get it. And he didn't want to turn the ball over, I get it. But man, that was, three times into the pile on that last one. And, let's kick a 53-yarder.
They really looked out.
I'll give him a break. He's a new coach.
Yeah. And I think he's a really good coach, as far as I love their game plans. I love their scheme. The offense has shown that they can be explosive. Trubisky seems to be getting better and better. You know, Cohen's been good. They've been utilizing Gabriel and Robinson, the two free agent wide receivers, Burton as well, the tight end. I really like what they're doing, and they're aggressive, and they've been in every game. They could easily be 5-0, but some of the game management stuff, to Frank's point, I think that's new coach stuff that hopefully he'll figure out.
Well, I was listening to a couple of my buddies as we had pizza after the game, and we didn't go to the game, and talking about what a different change it is on the Bears with him versus the other guy. Was it Fox?
That's not even close.
Well, I mean, okay.
It's not close, Chief.
Can I ask my question?
Yes,
Mr. Stash?
But I understand where you're going with this already, and it's just not even close.
All right,
he was running a prehistoric offense.
Okay, what I'm saying is, and this is, there's some truth to it. I don't know. We'll never know who's right here, you or me. What I'm saying is, last year
I'll choose.
Okay, Frank, you can referee. Last year, they came close to putting the uniform on you and me to play end. Right.
That's true. When you say end, you're talking about wide receivers.
Wide receiver.
And yeah, they were not very stacked in that.
Right, so they've added some pretty serious wide receivers. They got Kyle Long back, who's an all-pro. They didn't have him last year. Him on the team versus not having him on the team is quite the difference. They've got Trevathan back. They've got the other rush guy, their number one pick for a couple years ago, back, and he's a hell of a ball player. And they got Khalil Mack, and they got this kid they drafted. I'm going to say that even John Fox, if you give him those nine people in addition to last year's team, an orangutan would have a better team. You think?
Well, I would agree with that.
You think John Fox wouldn't have realized that now I have wide receivers I can throw deep? He's not that stupid. He somehow made it to the pyramid of coaching. I think even you and I would figure out, hey, we got, you know, an all-pro wide receiver. Why don't we throw the ball a little more? Duh.
I would agree with that, but I'm just talking about the
personality-wise,
the schemes they're actually running are just
I'm saying,
so much more advanced.
What
I'm skeptical. I'm skeptical. And you ignored one important thing. Harry Wiestand came in as offensive line coach. And I think that's
also
an important coach in football. This is the O-line coach.
He came from Notre Dame, right?
Yeah. And every guy that started for him was drafted and played in the pros.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm with you, Manny, but the idea, I mean, and first of all, I would never accuse you of being like this because you know what you're talking about. There are an awful lot of people in this world that think if I'm playing wide receiver, we should go deep. He just doesn't throw deep enough. Yeah, but the guy out there can't move. That's why we don't. But by the time he's deep, we're into the next play. I mean, right?
That's true.
So, I mean, do you honestly think, does anybody, I mean, I asked the listeners, does anybody honestly think that with all the fans bitching at you upwards and sideways with all the different sports reporters, that if you had a quarterback that could get some protection and you had a wide receiver to get behind people and in 2 seconds you could score 6 points, you think some coach, if he had that ability, would intentionally not do it? Why? Who could be that stupid?
No, I don't think he would intentionally not do it, but I also know that he didn't allow Mitch to throw the ball. First of all, he wouldn't even put Mitch in until like the eighth game. And then when he put him in, Mitch didn't have a single game last year, and part of that is, you know, he was a rookie, I get it, but he didn't have a single game last year where he threw more than 2 touchdown passes in a game. He's doing that in a half now.
This kid has made dramatic progress. If you watch him drop back one of the last games last year, or even one of the exhibition games, or maybe the first game this year, when he starts to move, his eyes went to the ground. Now they stay up. It's a dramatic difference.
That's
it's a
true.
Dramatic difference. You look at Rodgers.
And there's
not only
a dramatic
can run around,
difference in the offensive line, too.
Oh, yeah. And, so, I mean, when most guys in college, when they start running, they literally become a running back. Their eyes go down and they start looking for people. Some people can still look downfield when they're moving. The kid in Seattle can do it. Rodgers can do it. There's a few people that can. When they start, Drew Brees can do it. He's dodging people as he's looking downfield.
Yeah.
That's an amazing talent. It's worth way more than the arm. It's worth way more than the feet. It's being able to do two things at the same time.
That's really what separates the Rodgers and the Breezes and the Bradys. You know, Brady can't move, and yet somehow he never gets hit.
He moves a little bit.
He moves just a little bit, and his eyes are always downfield. And
he moves enough to get the lineman away from him where he's not thrown into somebody's hand. He never gets blocked.
Yeah, it's crazy.
He should have been tackled last night, too. Boston shouldn't have won. That guy let up because of the new rule.
Well, that's.
I think he thought that Brady had thrown the pass.
What was the, speaking of bad calls, the guys were all over me last night about.
There's a lot of them in that Bear game.
Well, they said something about the guy didn't even hit the quarterback. He reached around and smacked his arm and he got a roughing. What were they talking about? Was
well,
the
one angle, there was a Leonard Floyd, his second personal foul. He was rushing Osweiler, and he sort of swung his arm at him. And from one angle, it looked like his arm clipped the side of his helmet, which you can't hit the quarterback above the neck at all. And so he got a flag for it. The other angle showed that he actually whiffed and didn't actually touch him. But Osweiler's helmet moved back, and it looked like you could see from the one angle that the referee had. It looked like he hit him in the side of the helmet. That was the bad call.
There were a lot of pretty good games yesterday. I mean, I'm not a huge fan necessarily watching other teams, but boy, that game last night was pretty good.
That was one of the games of the year. The Bear game was really entertaining.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously the result wasn't great, and there was a lot of mistakes by both teams. I mean, two running backs fumble inside the one going into the end zone. When do you see that in a game?
Did they catch it? I never dreamed that they were going to get that ball on the 20.
That was a break, too.
Yeah.
It could have been at the 1-inch line, and instead it was at the 20, and then they drove right down the field. And then for some reason, they stopped trying to get more yards.
I assume a safety wins it, right? At that point.
Yes.
Yeah.
A safety wins it.
So even though those guys went down, they didn't score. So now it's the next score.
That's the next score.
So if there would have been a holding in the end zone, the game was over.
That's right.
Wow. Yeah, it's a good thing they made it back to the 20.
Yeah, that was the big break, because when you saw it happen, you thought for sure the Bears were going to get the ball at the 1 foot line.
So the standings now, everybody's jumbled up in the middle, right? Pretty much.
Yeah, and then the Packers play tonight on Monday Night Football against the 49ers, who are not very good.
Well,
without their quarterback.
How did that Boston team, New England team, how the hell did they ever lose to the Bills in Minnesota? Or who did they lose to? They lost two games, right?
New England is 4-2. They lost to Jacksonville. And they lost at Detroit.
Detroit, that's right.
That was a big surprise.
They got clobbered.
They got smoked at Detroit. Yeah. They got smoked at Jacksonville, too.
Detroit won again yesterday, right?
I think Detroit might have had a bye yesterday.
Maybe. But the so what are you thinking now? Was looking forward. The Bears lose to New England next week. They're 500.
Well, that's right. And, you know, this is a tough part of the schedule, obviously. Go down to Miami, then you play New England. Bears are 3-2, still percentage points ahead of the Vikings, who were 3-2-1 in the standings. So the Bears are still in first place in the NFC North. But that was a game you really would have liked to have won.
I thought for sure you were going to get a tie yesterday.
And Green Bay is heavily favored tonight, so it'll likely be Bears 3-2, then Vikings and Packers 3-2-1, and then the Lions are 2-3.
Where do the Packs playing tonight?
San Francisco.
Oh, that's right. Oh, you said that. Sorry. And, nobody's really out of it, though. Is there anybody who's 0-4? I guess the Cardinals only won one, right?
Yeah, the Cardinals are 1-5. The 49ers are 1-4. And then the Giants are 1-5. Those appear to be the three worst teams in the NFC. Other than that, I mean, there's a lot of teams. The Rams are the best team in the football right now. New Orleans is really good. Carolina is above 500. We talked about the Vikings and Packers. NFC East is not good, but I wouldn't count out the Eagles. And then the Redskins are 3-2 as well.
So. Atlanta's took a step back last year, but they look halfway decent.
Yeah, but they're 2-4.
Yeah, well, they've played everybody.
They've been in every game. They could easily be 4-2, but
yeah,
they play.
They play a lot of good teams.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it'll be Frank. Thank you very much, buddy. We'll talk at you. Actually, we may talk to you later in the week if we have a specific topic, because I know you love to do some research. S&P futures.
Okay.
S&P futures. Right now, only down 2, so we've come back dramatically. Dow only down 7. NASDAQ futures down 16. We're not down no stinking 100, Matty. We're only down 7. We'll be right back, Mr. Helsner.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here in our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's John@PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Something happening here.
Hello, everyone. Thanks, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holley, Professor Harold Starr, and Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures have come all the way back. We're only down 350. Dow's down 34. Right? I'm actually only down 3 right now. I'm sorry. And the NASDAQ is down 11. So we bounced back fairly dramatically. We were down 100 when we came in. We got McDonald's up $1.43 pre-market. One of the banks that had earnings was Bank America, and I'm going to get that number right here. Hello, Professor. How are you? Bank America's up a quarter, 28.71. So I'd say the banks have sort of weathered the storm. The big banks, nothing. They all beat a little bit. A couple missed on the bottom or the top line, but everybody beat on the bottom line. And I'd say the banks made it through. I'm stunned. Hal, we gave them all the money in the world, and they're doing okay. I'm shocked, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm not too shocked by that.
No. Why is it that the rest of the population seems to think that somehow or another, God, these guys, if they make money, it's so good for me. Is it really? Well, I don't know. Maybe it is, but I suppose it's better than if they go BK. But Jamie Dimon getting a bonus, put money in your pocket usually or no?
No, he's probably not going to put it in my pocket.
No,
it'd be nice if he did. I mean, I could use it. The kids are off diapers though. That's great.
Oh God. So
yeah. No more Amazon automatic shipments of diapers to our house.
So they all make it off
like
sort of
that the Bears won the Super Bowl in 85, seriously.
Was this a staggered exit, or was everybody get off the same month? We got Harry's triplets for those.
I think it really came down to the fact that we need to get him in preschool, and we send him to a private preschool that our son goes to. It's a private. It's really good. But they require that the kids be potty trained, and so one of them wasn't really quite potty trained, and he got kicked out for a couple weeks because he was... He'd go to the bathroom, and then he'd run around naked. So.
This sounds like what Matty Weber would do as a kid or something.
That's right.
But, yeah, they're potty trained now. We went to Denny's yesterday at the church, and we hit that about 4 o'clock. And Wes, the one that was running around naked just 3 weeks ago, says, I got to go to the bathroom.
Well, there you go.
And, I'll tell you, that there's nothing better than that when you got triplets and you're going through diaper after diaper after diaper every day, and you're... The problem one is asking to go to the bathroom. It's awesome. I
assume the
85. Seriously,
I assume the female of the species was the first to figure it out.
She was, yeah. She hasn't had any problems whatsoever. But Wes was definitely. We had some great stories. We're going to tell him when he's 16 with his girlfriend sitting there on the couch with us.
Oh God. Well, it's all right. You know, you got to embarrass him once in a while. I mean, it's.
Oh yeah, that's gonna be my job.
I don't know if you were listening earlier. Did you hear my? About my vindication?
Your vindication? Sorry, I didn't hear it. I'm drinking on my decaf and been sitting here for about 15 minutes trying to wake up.
Well, the story I've told ad nauseum about me listening to one of the guys from the Federal Reserve in the early 70s about how they took the Arab oil embargo, and they thought the inflation was all that, and they traced it through. They took energy out. They took food and energy because everybody was delivering food, and finally... One day they realized they had general inflation, and I think the same thing has sort of been happening now for a while. Well, this guy comes in and he's up there. This guy's named Stephen Roach. He evidently was an assistant to one of the guys. He told the exact same story that he was there, and he goes, one day Arthur Burns walks in and goes, "Boys, we got inflation. We can't hide it anymore." He goes, "At one point, they were taking 80% of the economy out of the calculation."
Really?
Because they thought it was all like oil and stuff. And now they've got some new term that I can't figure out where they, if it's an inflation that affects just like one product for some specific reason, some disease hits the apple crop that It's very Apple specific. It has nothing to do with the Fed, and there's some name they've been bandying about, and I can't remember. So I feel like an idiot for not remembering what it is. But anyway, right now they're saying that this is happening in a lot of places. It's tariff specific. It's something else specific. Maybe in fact that is the word actually, where it's specific only to one. I don't think this inflation now is anything near specific. It's been a Federal Reserve pounding money in the place for 9 years, for God's sake.
I mean, if your job is to manage the inflation rate and you're not doing a very good job of it, I mean, it's just human nature to look for ways to make it look good, right? So you eliminate things. I mean, that to me is what apparently is going on. I mean, or has been going on. You just kind of eliminate sources of inflation because that's your job, right?
Right. It's
I mean, they're no different than the guy working at Sears.
Well,
right? They have jobs to do.
Well, without getting into the, because God, we were ad nauseum about it, the Kavanaugh situation. You know, it's funny that the. Obviously, the people on the right, it's fake news. It's this and that. The people on the left, they got all their problems too. But I don't know, hell, if you felt the same way I did about the FBI investigation. Now, knowing basically the bleep these guys are under between Trump and Jeff Sessions, that anybody there who hasn't like, you know, sworn his allegiance to the chief doesn't belong in the FBI. If your wife's Democratic, you're not supposed. I mean, these guys. If you listen to the vitriol. It's so un-American, it's unbelievable. You can't have if you're a Republican mayor, you can't have a policeman who's a Democrat because he might follow you and give you a traffic ticket just because you're Republican. I mean, but the seventh investigation into this guy, I'm thinking, what do they have to find, Hal, that they're going to bring? I'm going to say there was a 99% chance that they came back and said they didn't find anything. Because if they would have, what would the egg on their face have been for the other six times?
I mean, yeah.
There's no way they were coming back with a problem. There's no way. I'm not saying they found one. They probably didn't.
Yeah.
But there's just no way. I'm sure, go out and investigate this, and if you idiots come back with something that you didn't find the other six times, don't even come back. Just go off a bridge. I can imagine that conversation. Just saying.
Yeah, you know, that whole thing is just, everything's been so politicized and it's really hard to tell what's really going on because everything is so hyper-politicized. I get to the point where I don't even want to watch that stuff anymore.
Oh, I know.
Because you just don't know. I mean,
no, you know. There's stresses in the system,
yeah.
And you know, I think people's behavior. Well, and again, that's why I love having you on. You know more about the numbers side of economics, and I was more of a behavioral guy. So we each know some about what the other's talking about, but we had different specialties. Plus, you went a lot longer. You got a PhD. I don't. But I have an article, actually. I run it off, and it's sitting here. It has to do with about the country is being essentially minority governed right now. And I think there's stresses to go on with that. I'm not saying that anybody should flee to the Democrats. I'm sure not going to because I'm looking for. In fact, my buddies ran for out of town, and all we did was talk about: is there a chance of a third party to pick up everybody who doesn't want to be a Democrat or Republican anymore? Which I think has got to be.
Look at the number of independents. And
yeah.
The number of independents exceeds the number of Republicans, and it exceeds the number of Democrats. So.
Yeah, I would agree.
But Democrats and Republicans is an oligopoly that has put in place a system that makes it very difficult to launch a third party, a viable third party, right? Most states, it's almost impossible to get on a ballot unless you're a Democrat or Republican.
Wasn't last election, Maddie, I think you already checked this, so you probably have some memory. Wasn't last election the first time ever that a third party was on all 50 states? The Libertarians finally got on all 50?
Yeah, I think if the candidate had been more of a Libertarian instead of an average, if you will, of Democrats or Republicans, instead of talking about how... you know, I'm social, liberal, fiscal, conservative. You know, our candidate. Well, I'm not a libertarian. I'm a little L libertarian. The libertarian candidate should be able to describe libertarian theory and policies in a way that average Joe Schmo can understand it and embrace it instead of kind of run away from it. And that's, I think, the reason why we didn't do as well as we had hoped.
Matty, you know how. Is that just an example of how difficult it is to agree with a libertarian?
Yeah, it's pretty difficult. But I think in general, libertarian If you think government should stay out of your bedroom, if you think government should stay out of the boardroom, and you're a Democrat or Republican, I think you're in the wrong party. So,
well, I mean, yeah. what I meant to say was actually, was it last year? There was a weekend, Alan, when we had a bunch of people were tweeting in and talking about, you know, third parties and stuff. So I think it was snowing or whatever it was. You couldn't go out of the house. So I'm thinking I'm going to spend 2 hours researching exactly what you talked about. And I went through about 4 different states, mm-hmm. and what it would take to get on the ballot. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Some states.
I think Minnesota has a tradition of third parties, right? They had the Democratic Labor Party, something that kind of sides with the Democrats in Congress, but I think most states, it's really, you have to really work hard to get on the ballot.
If you go through the list, well, I went through the list of how you get on there. That was ridiculous. You need an attorney in every state. But
now you understand why I say regulations are things that prevent competition.
Well, sure.
This is no different, right?
But if you go through virtually every state, all you'll see is, last time, like I said, because the Libertarians managed to get on, you'll see, like, the returns for every state, you'll see, like, 3 people. Some states you'll get 4. And then you'll see a state, I think it was Michigan was one of them, I think maybe Colorado might have been another one, where literally, Hal, if you ran, there'd be, you know, Hal Snar, 25 votes. There's like 15 guys or 10 guys, or women, that are actually listed in the state. So there must be a few states where it's fairly easy to get on, even if,
yeah.
you know, if the only family going to vote for it. I think Michigan was one of them. But it's bizarre when you'll see 2, 2, 3, 3, 3. Well, everybody had 3 because I think the Libertarian. You know, I still think they might have missed a state. But then you'll see 4, 5, 6, 10. So, I ran into a couple of states that you have to a write-in. If you don't register to be a write-in, you know, it doesn't count.
Wow.
Which is even more bizarre.
Yeah, but it's just anti-competitive.
Well, that's what. That's why
they own a monopoly. They only represent what, maybe 50% of the population. Yet they own 100% of the power.
Yeah, sure. Well, and if you look just at the vote numbers, and Maddie was the first guy to dig this up and actually do some research. Matter of fact, somebody else has stole your stuff, Maddie, and wrote this article. You weren't here last week when I was talking about it. That a vote now in California is 1/50th, counts for 1/50th of the Senate vote in Alaska or North Dakota. We're reaching, and then you take the Senate now is putting people in the Supreme Court for life.
Yeah.
So the most skewed body has the most power, the Senate.
Well, I think that's by design, though, right?
Well, that doesn't make it right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're not a democracy, so you know, we're the United States, not the United People. So I think it's just an artifact of our system that goes back, you know, a couple hundred years.
Well, according to the article, the framers of the Constitution were so concerned about tyranny of the majority that they did all this stuff, and now what you have is tyranny of the minority.
Yeah. Well, if the Democrats are in power, we have the tyranny of the minority, and if the Republicans are in power, we have the tyranny of the minority, because, you know, each party represents about 30% of the population.
Well, okay, but...
So it goes both ways.
Well, no, actually, I'm going to say no, it doesn't. I mean, it has in our lifetime, okay? But this is an absolute... The idea that California... And again, every conservative person I've talked to has said, screw California, let them leave. So, I mean, that's really the attitude. Okay, but the idea that, you know, 40 million
people...
Well,
I'm a Libertarian, Tom, so if California elects to leave, California should be able to leave.
But
right?
you can't tell me that, I mean, in a representative in the House... That somehow or another, that 750,000 people in Alaska should have 2 senators, and 40 million people in California have 2, and those senators are putting people on the Supreme Court that are going to be doing their bidding long after they're dead.
Well, you know, if you look at the European Union, they have kind of a similar system. They have the lower house and they got the upper house.
Right.
And in their upper house, each country has 1 senator, if you will, and the EU kind of like copied our model, so.
What I'm saying is the Senate has powers.
And then if you look at the UN, each country has a representative, right?
I would not have done it any differently. Okay, what I'm saying is at this point now, it's gotten so skewed that you wonder, you know, the Senate declares war, the Senate does the treaties, right? and the Senate puts people on the Supreme Court. Well, it's become our most, I mean, I'm not going to worry so much about the Electoral College and 3 million people one way or the other. If the voters want to fix that, they can fix that in 2 years. If they think,
well, there are the movements to turn the Electoral College vote into who wins the popular vote, right? But the only states that are going to do that are the states that are already going to vote for Democrats. I don't think Idaho is ever going to go proportionate or allocate their electors to the popular vote, because that would give up their power. So I think the only states where the Electoral College vote total for a state is going to be awarded to the popular vote nationally are states like California, New York, and Illinois.
I'm going to say that Nebraska is a red state, and they do it, right? They're the only states.
Well, they might have been doing it for a while, right?
Right,
but it's not new, right? The states right now that do it according to the popular vote within their state, I think they're going to continue doing it.
Okay, well, all I'm saying is the stress causes that we're finding, and we're each naming them. You're naming that these two parties control the place, and oh, by the way, not even half the people identify with either extreme string of either party. So that's a problem. And what I did was say, okay, take that to its next level. We really have minority. I mean, like I said, I'm not going to worry about the presidency, the Electoral College and stuff, because it's not that many people. But what if it's 1 year, it's 10 million different in a vote, or 15 or 20? You know, but I mean, the idea, we talked about human nature. Whoever wins, Democrats or Republicans, seeing as both sides to me are equally whatever, the chances are somebody winning. Like, I don't know if, you actually, Hal, are a pretty decent guy, so is Maddie. You could actually win something and say, those rules were wrong, we need to change them, it was unfair. But in this world, in the world of politics, you're never going to have the winning party turn around and saying the Electoral College is a sham. Because they got in.
Look at Trump. look at Trump, for example. During the election, he was talking about how the Fed created the massive bubble. And then the Fed has raised interest rates, what, to 2.25%? And he's telling the Fed to knock it off. I mean, right? I mean, that's exactly what you're talking about right there, right?
Yeah, well, but I mean, if Trump next time loses because of the Electoral College, he'll be bleating like a goose.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but you know, the problem with the argument that Hillary won the election is that, you know, it isn't a national election, and if there was no Electoral College, Republican candidates would go to California and they would go to New York and they would most definitely probably increase their vote count. But in those states, in the current system, there's no reason for Republicans to go to those states. So Republicans in those states feel like their vote doesn't count, so they don't turn out at all.
Okay.
So I think when you change the rules after the game's played, there's a problem.
I
like to avoid those kind of hypotheticals.
You're the third very intelligent, leaning to the right guy that has told me the same, I'm going to say, unusual thing.
Yeah.
That somehow or another, Kevin said it, two other people that I talked to, my buddies at the Fed, about all the Republicans that would vote in California if they thought their vote counted. And yet, how about all the Democrats in California that don't need to go off the couch because they already won? Why do you or Kevin or my Fed guys...
I think it's easier to vote for somebody when you know you're going to win.
The idea of speculating on the people who haven't voted being one side or the other, I find... How do you even go there?
I mean, well, you know, it's kind of like with teaching evaluations. Generally speaking, if students like your class, they're okay and they're not going to vote. But if they don't like the class, they're going to vote, right? So I think it's kind of like the same thing. I think there's a lot of bandwagon jumping when it comes to politics. You want to be on the winning team. You want to say, hey, I voted for the guy that won the election.
What I'm saying is if 60% of the people in California are Democrats and 40% are Republicans, and half the people vote. Why would you think the percentage of the people not voting are any different than people that did vote?
Yeah, I mean, that's a valid case, but, I mean, and it's something we can't know unless we go to a popular vote system in the United States. We just can't observe that data.
Well,
it's all speculation.
But why should I go down the block and vote Democratic in Illinois when I know that's already won? What's the difference?
Same that is true.
I mean, it's the same getting your ass off the same sofa, right?
and a lot of these non-voters are probably just doing like Richard Pryor did in Brewster's Millions, right? None of the above. Voting is a vote. Maybe you did it on purpose.
I'm always going to go when the judges are there so I can vote no.
With retention, oh, yeah.
Retention ballot. Did I tell you, that's how I met Eric.
Oh, really?
Our other professor. I saw him in the Tripoli once in a while. And so I go down and I'm voting. And Jan's judge wife, I shouldn't say this, had said there's two or three people that, you know, are the same people the Tribune said, don't vote to retain these people. And so every lawyer group. So I got over there and I forgot my cheat sheet. So I go, I'm sure not going to vote for them. So I voted no for everybody. Right? So I walk into Tripoli and I get a beer and Eric sits next to me and I go, by the way, I've seen you there. My name's Tom Howell, blah, blah, blah. He goes, where are you coming from? And I said, well, I just came from voting. He goes, really? And I said, yeah, you know, I was there. I couldn't remember the name of the three judges I was supposed to vote no for, so I voted no for all of them. So did I. So there's where the friendship started. How bizarre is that? But, I don't know. But you know the weird part is, Hal, I went back on retention ballot after retention ballot. If you just leave the population to their own endeavors, 85% of the people are going to vote yes, even though they don't know any of the names they're voting for.
Oh, yeah.
But
when I go vote for judges, I do a little research and I look at what their peers say and whatnot. And I only voted down one candidate because their peers were so, they ranked them so low that it's like, well, man, if they're getting this low of a ranking, let's do that. But I think a lot of the judges in Utah seem to be pretty good, whether they're conservative or I think they're pretty good at upholding the law, or treating people equally under the law for the most part, I guess. But there was one that was just really bad, so I voted no on one judge.
Well, see, now in Illinois, if they also had a list of people that the Tribune or the Sun-Times or both or the League said, you got to get this person out.
Yeah.
Virtually, guess what their percentages are? Almost across the board every time.
Probably 80%, 70%.
No,
easily over 50, right?
If nobody says anything, the numbers always come in at like 85. This is bizarre. Yeah. I mean, it's people behavior. If everybody says this guy or lady is a sleazebag, the number comes in between 62 and 67. Never enough to get them out. So essentially says that like 18% of the people read the paper.
You have to be really, really, really bad to get out.
Yeah. They're talking about people who don't show up and that kind of thing. So it's... But you look at, you know, how
I think what it is, when people go in there to pull the lever, right, they want to kind of get in there and get out of there as quickly as possible. So they're looking for all D's or all R's. And then when it comes to judges, they're kind of going, all right, I'm going to get out of here. So I'm just going to sit yes on all these people because it didn't affect my life. I mean, that's what's really going on,
so,
right?
Speaking of which, Carl, let's talk about a weirdo story about upbringing. Maddie, you'll love this. My stepfather, he wants to go vote, right? So I'll tell you what, let's go early and I'll drive you to work. Okay. So we go up there, and in those days, you could pull the one lever, right? Democrat, Republican. You can't anymore. I mean, Maddie, I don't know if you do. Do you ever vote when you could do that?
No, but I know what you're talking about.
Well, my stepfather's one of these from the South Side, been a Democrat his whole life, you know, union. He wasn't union, but I mean, all his friends were and stuff. So I go in there, and he goes up, and he's done, right? So all of a sudden, I hear him bellowing across the polling place. What are you doing in there? Just pull the right lever. Let's go. I got to get to work. I'm like, would you shut up? Imagine that as your upbringing. I got a question for you, Mal. This has nothing to do. Last night, I was talking to some of my friends from school. Again, we've been together forever. Just talking about the Washington that we see today and how much it's telling essentially a lie. And this, you know, you can go back to people have put themselves in power doing this. Telling a lie, keep telling it, an amazing amount of people will start to believe it. And you don't even know you're doing it. I mean, I watch this Trump phenomenon, and not just for him or whatever. I look at what it's doing to people, and some of the things that you thought were only history are like happening again. And I mean, how do you your kids are probably still too young, but how do you deal? I don't think most people are set up to having somebody just lie right to their face and just immediately know that that's a lie. I mean, I don't think most people's psyche is like that. I mean, I know mine isn't, and clearly not going to be that from your president. But I've talked to people, a lot of them are from the right or whatever. They talk about, look how much better the economy and how many people are going to work. They had some guy came on the other day, and I assume he's right. You know, he said in the last 20 months of the Obama administration, the number of jobs created per month that comes out, you know, every monthly, was 211,000 average. And since Trump's been there, it's like 195, 198. So, I mean, it's close. I'm not saying Trump's doing a crummy job there. I'm not. I think he's actually doing a pretty darn good job. But the facts are just different. I'm going to say that everybody, Democrat, Republican, if you went out with a little thing today, went to coffee shops, went in bars, just asked people on the street, virtually everybody would say more jobs have been created under Trump than Obama, because just he says it every week. And it just gets ingrained into you to where you believe it, even though it's wrong. I mean, am I right? I think.
Well, I mean, you are, but, you know, people are going to side with their team, right? No matter what their team does, they're going to side with their team.
Hell, I was surprised.
Same thing goes on the other side, right?
I was surprised. I actually thought...
I'm glad I'm not on a team. I'm glad I'm on a team of one.
I'm not either, but I was really surprised. I never thought Obama's 20 months. I knew they were pretty equal. I never thought there were more. I just would have guessed that Trump was like a couple of thousand more.
But there's an issue with the way that jobs are created.
I understand that. But I'm saying...
Because, you know, if you work 1 hour a week for pay, that is considered an increase of one in employment, right?
I get that. I'm just saying these guys never let the facts get in the way of a good statement.
Yeah. So the aggregation is a problem. And the way the government defines employment, you know, you work 15 hours or more for no pay for a family-owned business, or you work 1 hour for pay for, you know, both those are the same.
Correct.
That is counted the same as I'm now got a job working 40 hours a week. So there was a lot of part-time labor.
Oh, I agree. And we know Carl goes through that every month.
In the early part and through that expansion, because it wasn't a very good expansion.
Well, Carl, I'm thinking about Carl. Hal, take care of yourself, buddy. Thank you. Are you going to have a diaper burning party with the rest of the ones you have?
We are. We're going to have a big bonfire, and you guys are all invited.
Oh, God. I think we'll wait for the ski season. We won't do that. Thanks, buddy. SB Futures down 250, Dow Futures down 20. As if he was down 15, Mr. David Adelman, when we come back. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right
now. Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Mowley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. David Animal in a second. Now, S&P futures now down 250. They were down like 12 when we came in. Dow down 23, NASDAQ down 14. Dow was down triple digits. And we've run back up, and now we've leaking a little bit again. Retail sales number was a real showstopper, only 0.1% in September. Everybody had it at a 0.6% increase expected, so September was not the month that everybody thought retail-wise, and I'm kind of surprised about that myself. I wonder if there's some glitch in the number somewhere. DAX now up 58.5%, FTSE up 17.2%. These guys were all flat last time we did this. CAC round up 3, although that is still flat. Over in Asia, though, whack, whack, whack. Nikkei down 423, 1.9%. Shanghai down 38, 1.5%. Hang Seng down 356, 1.4%. They just cannot get out of their own way over there. They're just going south, south, south. Oil, like I said, up 55 cents. Brent up 77. Spread is now $8. $9.40. Natural gas up 8 cents again, 324, which I think is their highs. We'll get that from David in a second. RBOB 195. Gold to the moon here this morning, up 1150, 1233. Silver up 12 cents. That's good for the good guys. David, Maddie, we got first traffic, weather, sports.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still, the biggest issue is on the Stevenson, that earlier crash on the outbound side just before Kedzie Avenue involving a semi hitting a rear-ending a car. That actually was a fatal accident. And
no kidding.
Yeah, not good. The two right lanes were closed. Now it's down to just one right lane closed, but still all kinds of delays on the Stevenson, and there's gapers on the inbound side as well. Lakeshore Drive out to the Tri-State's at 55 minutes right now. It's an hour and five to I-355, so expect significant delays on the Stevenson if that's your area of transportation. Southside Expressways otherwise are looking okay. No issues on the Dan Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford. High volumes on the Eisenhower coming in from the Western Burbs, but no accidents to report. Same could be said for the Kennedy and Edens. Off the expressways, we have a crash, Route 83 at 31st Street out in the Western Burbs, and not too far from there at 55th and Main, there is a crash as well. One other issue, Irving Park Road, Route 19 at Spring Hill Drive in the Western Suburbs out near Carroll Stream in that area, there is a crash. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, we're cloudy early with some rain in the area, cold. And then we'll turn mostly clear, a high of 48 today. Right now it's overcast and 39 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast and a high of 75. Right now it's cloudy and 63. In sports, as we talked about earlier, the Bears with a frustrating 31-28 overtime loss yesterday in Miami. Bears blew a 21-10 lead, also missed a game-winning field goal attempt in overtime. Bears are now 3-2, still first place in the NFC North by percentage points over the Vikings. Cardinals still just with one win as they lost in Minnesota the Vikings 27-17. Sunday Night Football was a great game between the Patriots and the Chiefs, and it was New England over Kansas City 43-40 on a last-second field goal. And in baseball, ALCS is now even at one game apiece. Boston rallied to beat the Astros at home 7-5.
After David, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
After four games, what do you like in this baseball, man? I'm thinking they're all dead even.
Yeah, I would agree. I really don't know. I think going into it, I thought it would be Brewers and Red Sox, and you know, I'm not sure that my mind is completely changed on that. But Dodgers and Astros look very, very good. So and both teams stole a game on the road and are in the driver's seat.
Well, in deference to our friend Nick at the Tripoli, I have serious reasons why I want Boston to get their ass kicked. I can't stand those guys that come in the seventh inning and they're like 2 minutes between pitches. What's with the one guy the other night? It was like 2 minutes between pitches. They'd go to the mound and then they'd still cross the guy up. How ignorant is that guy?
Yeah, I don't know. Not knowing exactly, you know, that much about their bullpen, I have heard that it's kind of their weakness, and it's hard to find a weakness on a team that won 107
wins the ball 100 miles an hour. I mean, he's their seventh and eighth innings, but he's unbelievable. But he comes in, catcher gives him the sign, all of a sudden the catcher's diving for the ball, and oh, geez, he crossed him up on that one. All of a sudden the catcher's out, they talk to him, he crossed him up. I mean, what's with this guy? And the batter keeps stepping out like, are you going to throw it? I mean, what's going on?
The Astros look really good, by the way. I wouldn't be surprised at all if they made it back to the World Series, even in spite of how great of a season the Red Sox have had.
Well, you think they'll get Verlander two or three times if they need him?
That's a good question. Definitely two.
Well, what do you pitch? They should be able to get Sale three times. He only pitched four innings.
Yeah,
and how do you not come
he's
got to
pitch
that?
A lot better if they even won him three times.
Well, that's
he had a stomach ailment also. They hospitalized him for a night.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Isn't that what happened in the natural? They gave him the bad stuff? So, David, we have crazy stuff happen. The Asian market's getting clobbered again. You have the better graphs. Is that how many year low is that now in, like, the Shanghai or the Hang Seng? It's got to be pushing.
Yeah, well, they did have the one big rally Friday. I mean, Shanghai had been closed for a holiday and then got punished big time and then came back like 4 or 5% on Friday. So I don't know how many year low it is. The big news was, you know, with Mnuchin talking and Trump talking and, you know, just currency manipulation, and we're going to model it after what we did with Mexico and Canada, and, you know, so we're not going to let, and that applies to Japan, and so then the K225 after, you know, 2.5 weeks ago making 27-year highs, now all of a sudden is at 2-month lows. So they took brunt of that rally away.
I don't get the part where the few changes, this is from people that have been tweeting in and stuff that know more than me, they claim the few changes that happen in this NAFTA, don't call it NAFTA anymore, actually are changes that would have happened anyway under the TPP thing.
Yeah, the point about it is, and I'm not, you know, for manipulating currencies or trying to set rates or, you know, cross forex rates or anything like that. I'm not for that. But, you know, if the Japanese can go manipulate their ETFs or buy 25%+ of the Nikkei 225 shares, how are you going to stop them from, if nothing else, buying or selling yen futures, you know, to put their currency down to help their trade? I mean, how are you
going to
do that?
Well, you're not going to, except for, David, you and I have been in the business a long time. As much as they may say the central bank, you know, put $50 billion into the currency, that's a pittance of a day's trade in the currencies.
Right.
So usually they lose. All they do is lose money.
Right. No, you're right.
I mean, they shouldn't do it because it's a dumb thing to do.
I can remember, you know, 20 years ago and more, when, you know, the Japanese central bank's in there to buy yen or sell yen or whatever. And, I mean, invariably over a two, three-day period, they were wrong.
Well, I mean, as much as I am not a huge fan of some of the Chinese business antics, for years all you heard was people here, mostly, you know, well, I won't say conservative, it doesn't really matter, but it happened in the Obama administration. They attacked the Chinese for manipulating the currency. Their currency was pegged at a dollar. if they were manipulating the currencies, we were the ones that were manipulated, right?
You know, I don't know that. I mean, you're probably right. I don't know with in relationship to the yuan. I know to the extent of the Hong Kong dollar, that was pegged. How much the yuan was, I don't know.
I thought the yuan was pegged for, it was 8.25 to the dollar for a while,
that was
right?
The Hong Kong dollar.
Okay, well, I thought that was the yuan.
Right. No, that was the Hong Kong dollar.
All right.
The yuan, obviously, especially when they bought the, you know, got the rights, the 99-year thing from Britain and whatever and took over Hong Kong, there is a relationship, but it's not a peg.
Okay. Well, for a long time it didn't change, though.
Right. No, you're right. You're right. It was in that narrow band because they didn't want it to get out of line with the Hong Kong dollar or you'd set up an arbitrage.
Okay. Well, it seems like we or a lot of the stuff that people thought was relationship has become somewhat unglued. I mean, the last thing we want, and I really honestly do not, I think the president has, you know, he may not be my favorite, but there's a lot of stuff going on in the world. He's got a lot on his plate. I mean, the last thing, well,
to
some
say
of
the least.
Well, but some of it is self-induced. But having said that, you know, the last thing that the guy needs is Saudi, you know, like him or lump him, we're sort of in bed with him. And this guy, the minute he got the job and like basically took over and forced everybody else out, I had this nagging feeling that here's, you know, dictator 479, and sure enough, you know, he put all his people in jail and tortured them and everything, took their dough. Whether or not it was corruption or not, I don't know. It seems like if the money comes to him, it's not corruption. If it goes to somebody else, it's corruption. He's not the first person in our last couple of centuries that has felt that way, right? And virtually all the other them were dictators. If it's my dough, it's okay. If it's your dough, it's corruption.
You're right.
So now all of a sudden, the last thing Trump needed was for these guys to have, you know, evidence on an Apple Watch that they tortured and killed a guy and dismembered him so they didn't have to bring him out the front door. It's the last thing anybody needs to hear in the midst of all this other mess with Iran and Russia and everything else, right?
Absolutely.
I don't know how you come down from this. I mean, yeah, it's a big problem. It's a problem that our guys should know that this guy is a budding dictator. And, you know, but now what do you do? You said you're going to sell him all these arms. Are you going to go to Boeing and say you can't deliver them? I mean, that's what we did. For those that, you know, rant and rave about the cash we gave to Iran, okay, that was the source of that cash, is that Iran had sent progress payments in advance for military hardware that we did not deliver after the revolution. And Fari can tell you exactly what the list was, how many F-14s, or I think there was a couple destroyers on there, David, or something.
I have no idea.
But Fari has the list, and we never delivered it. So that was... that was Iranian money that was sent over here. Now, the big question is, we sent the money back. Who sent it? Did that money go to Boeing and Lockheed and these other places? And then we, the people, sent it back? Or did it never make it? There's all these little details that, you know.
Oh, it's a mess.
Yeah. And
now with this, you know, investment conference. Are you referring to that with Saudi Arabia?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to.
I mean, everyone withdrawn. Yeah. I mean, even you know the chairman of Blackstone and BlackRock, and they're in charge of huge amounts of, you know, Saudi investment money, and so we're not coming until they find out, you know, and disclose what the story is on this, you know, journalist that has certainly disappeared, but you know, deemed dead. And you know it's huge, you know. And then the Saudi oil minister coming out over the weekend. Oh, you think Trump's angry at $75 to $80 oil? You know, 100's definitely in the front view mirror, and $200 or $300 a barrel oil is, you know, not out of the question. So you know they rant and rave, and the whole thing is a mess, though.
Well, it is. What I'm going to say that there is a strong chance because I don't know. I'm going to say that. Those companies got that money, produced the equipment. When they couldn't deliver it there, found somebody else to sell it to, maybe after a while, took a little bit of a hit on it, and when the money went back, we sent it. We didn't make the call to Boeing and say, send us $30 million from 40 years ago. I bet we didn't do that.
Right.
I'm going to guess. Because at some level, you get to do whatever you want, right? And at our level, David, you better be careful. Just saying.
Right.
What these emerging markets, It's on the back burner news-wise. I mean, I'm trying to, I know I'm jumping here. What is going on over in Italy? I know the bank stocks are all down. The rates are back up over there. Is this almost as bad as last time, and then all of a sudden one day we'll talk about it, or is it not so bad?
I don't know the answer to that, but I know it's been up and down, you know, with the Italian banks, and, you know, I think it stems back to the whole, you know, the original stuff with, you know, the Maastricht Treaty, you know, when they formed the euro, and, you know, you shouldn't have more than 3%, you know, debt, you know, and as far as the euro base and all that stuff. And, of course, nobody's ever met that standard, but, you know, Greece and Portugal and Spain and Italy, and every time it's, you know, a new mushroom pops up and they can't meet it, and then, you know, who's going to bail them out and how they're going to get the debt down, and, you know, then the finance minister comes out, you know, of Italy or in the time Greece, and says, you know, oh, I have a plan, and then everything rallies, and then, well, there is no plan, and so the Italian bonds get crushed, and, you know, that, as they say, this too shall pass.
Well,
I'm not minimizing it on a daily, weekly basis. It's important, but in the overall scheme of things, I don't think it's that big of a deal.
Well, I had two of my pals this weekend that I met at the tailgate that listen to the show on occasion, and Kevin was there, listens and is on all the time. A question from two of them, David, is they seem to remember, was it Cyprus? And I don't think Greece did this, but I'm not positive. I'm going to ask you. Are we not as concerned about the banks, because is it in the DNA now that if the banks really go under, we're going to take 5 or 6 or 10% from all the depositors like we did in Cyprus? Is that now part of the fix?
Probably.
I had two people ask me that. You know what I'm
saying? I would guess, you know, I mean, I think Greece did it too.
Like, yeah, you know what we're talking about?
Their intermediate bonds, 10-year to 20-year bonds, the short-term were okay, the notes and the long-term were okay, but they just said to the, you know, 10 to 20-year notes and bonds, sorry.
I'm talking about the actual depositors in the Cyprus banks. Now, granted, that time they were all Russian.
I don't know the details.
I think, well, the story was, don't worry about it because they're all Russians. They're all crooks. They're all from overseas.
Probably true.
Well, it could very well be.
they got their 80-foot regattas, you know, in Monte Carlo and Monaco. Who cares?
Well, they basically said, okay, we have FDIC insurance, but everybody's taking a hit on the first 10 grand or 20 grand or something, or some percentage. And so the depositors did lose money.
Yeah,
I just wonder. I mean, these guys were asking me, "Is that now in the playbook?" And I did not know how to answer that. I mean, it's in the playbook.
Somebody takes the bite.
Yeah,
I'm sure you're right that there was depositors, but also intermediate bondholders. I know they took a bite.
I do too. But the question was, we don't seem as worried about the Italian banks this time through, and it looks like they're almost.
I think in Europe, the biggest factor right now is how does England, the UK, you know, resolve the issues that are, you know, separating them from their own Ireland and just from the Brexit deals, and how do they, you know, formulate the trade with the rest of the EU and that kind of thing. I think that's, and it's up and back, and how much support does Theresa May have, and, you know, what are their finance and trade ministers, you know, doing to resolve the issue, and that's, I think, a bigger factor right now than the, not that the Italian bank situation isn't, it's talked about, it's in the, you know, daily headlines and Reuters and Dow Jones News, but we've seen it so many times from other areas that I'm not saying the market's complacent. It moves on a day-to-day basis, but I don't think it moves on.
Well, last 10 times, if you would have traded afraid because of it, you basically got your ass kicked.
Right.
And so it's like there's a lightning warning on the golf course, but if you walk off, you forfeit your green fees. Well, the last 20 times you played, you forfeited your green fees, and you're not happy about it. But that doesn't mean you don't walk off the next time. Right.
I tell the story of my son and I, and they sounded the alarm when we were on the, they sounded the horn when we were on the 18th fairway, and my son, who's usually much more aggressive, he said, Dad, let's go in, and I said, you know what, we got another 100 yards, it won't happen, and literally a tree fell behind the 18th hole.
Good. Oh, God.
I mean, it was struck in the middle of the trunk. Then we ran off. We didn't walk.
We were at...
I was the dummy that day.
Remember, we don't have much time, but they had that, back when before the South Loop got to be, I don't know if you remember this, man, there was a big, huge dome. Maybe I'm going to say like 25th Street. I would have Brian made the curve there, and it was an indoor golf thing. Remember that thing, the big white dome?
I do. I remember that.
Well, remember the day it went down?
I don't remember that.
It went down, and they had one of the, it wasn't Taste of Chicago, but it was something like that, where all the tents were up on Columbus Drive. Well, we had this wacko storm here, where it was a microburst. That thing went down, all the tents went up in the air at the, whatever it was. Well, we were playing, one of the guys gets us on Medina, and I had never played Medina before, and I'm dying to play Medina, right? So it wasn't the number three course, we're playing a number one, which is sort of the same thing, it's just a little shorter.
I've played it.
We're on a ninth hole. I'm actually playing halfway decent, and I'm going, wow, this is terrific. I'm shooting a pretty good game at Medina. I feel like I'm on top of the world. All of a sudden, we see these clouds coming, and we're on a ninth tee. We hit the ball, and the clouds are coming pretty damn fast. And all of a sudden, we get up near the hole, and we hit up to the green. So I had a drive, and I put a wedge. I'm not that far from the hole. I'm thinking, man, I'm not even birdie the ninth hole. All of a sudden, we look back across the fairway, or across the course. All these limbs are coming down, all the way coming toward us. My ball could still be. We didn't even pick up our ball. We raced into the clubhouse. Then they closed the course because there were so many limbs down. That was the same day as this thing went down, and it ruffled all the people. You get one of those storms.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I'm sitting there going,
best
okay.
$2 golf ball that you ever left.
Oh
behind.
God, yeah, I know. I felt like the guy in Caddyshack. The good Lord wouldn't ruin the best game of my life when the guy gets struck by lightning, right?
PJ Saluki writes it on Twitter. He says, before you let David go, ask him if he thinks the breakout in gold is the real deal, and what support and resistance levels is he now looking at.
Tell PJ Saluki that was my next question.
Well, there you go.
Thank you very much, PJ. David? What do you think?
It looks real. I mean, the market, I'm looking at December future contract. It spiked down to 1167. Came up to resistance just below 12 and a quarter. Literally went sideways between about 1190 and, 1220 to 25. And looked like a breakout, Thursday, inside day Friday, and then, breaking out again today. So I would say as long as 1220 doesn't give up, basis December future, looks awesome. It looks like maybe 1290, 1300 is the target. Next big resistance is 1250 to 1255. Gets through there, I think it should easily go to 1290, maybe 1300. It looks real. It's a beautiful formation.
David, from your lips to God's ears, when a GDX went under 18, I don't get a whole lot of calls from my people give me grief, but I know I was pretty miffed because I've got all kinds of people in this, and it seemed to me like we should be going up in gold, and we weren't. Just because you think something's going to happen doesn't mean the market agrees with you. Well, now we're back reasonably fat and happy, and if we get another 2 hours out of this thing, I went from being the clunk of the month to being the genius of the month all in like a week and a half. And it's nice.
It really looks good. I mean, the only thing is, you're roughly at 1235. And in the next, 10 to 15, if it retests, it's got to hold. You don't want to see under 1220, basis December future.
What, is there a spot in here where if it runs up, I should sell calls against it?
You can try 1250, 1255, but I would be light because if it gets through that, it really isn't a whole lot of resistance to 1290 to 1300. So another $15 up. Yeah, I hedge a third of the position.
We have one of the questions from our friend David talking about the president. And right now, that we all of a sudden we can't stand the mortgage area can't stand the prices going up any higher on the mortgages. David, I'm not saying whoever said this is wrong. I'm just saying you and I have been saying that for, what, 8 years now?
Yeah.
You get so used to these numbers, people get valued at the wrong price, and when you change, it causes pain. What the guy say in Hunt for Red October? What, this bleep keeps happening, people are going to start to die? I mean, how can anybody
know? Well, it came at the wrong time. Had it come in the spring when the housing market, you know, gets in full blast and there's a lot of, you know, mortgages rolled over, whatever, that's one thing. But to come when the season's over, you know, in September, October, you know, this is when it's slowing anyways, and when you know, home builders are cutting back, they don't have a lot of inventory, but there's virtually no demand, this is a bad time.
All right, I'm going to ask you a question. Is there ever a good time for a financial ass whooping?
Yeah, I just said so. It's never a good time. But if it was February, March, when demand's coming,
I agree.
It would be much better than September, October.
You know what I think?
This is the real ass whooping.
You know what the real worst time is for most people in Chicago? It's coming exactly when the property tax is going up another 10%.
Yeah, it's a terrible time. It's the worst time.
SP Futures down 475, Dow Futures down 45, NASDAQ Futures down 23. David, thank you very much. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's, get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early. I
got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.